Isn't it interesting that when we really grasp what God has done for us, how grateful we are that He chooses to also do that for someone else?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm a kid from, a hillbilly kid from Antioch, Tennessee. I mean, the proof that God can do anything He wants to do through whoever He wants to do. So I'm not confused that I did it. I really didn't. I just showed people God's and grandma's ways of handling their life, handling their money, and then I think God has chosen to touch that.
One of the things we're really excited about at TBN is The Ramsey Show, now 5 days a week, 5 p.m. Eastern time. For anyone who's not had a chance to tune in yet, tell us a little bit about the format of the show.
Well, it's a talk radio show that started 30 years ago, and now is on 680 talk radio stations in America. It's the second largest talk radio show in America.
Wow.
My friend Sean Hannity is number one, and we're number two. And then it's gone over into podcast and has become the 11th most downloaded podcast in the world. In the world. And now it's gone over onto YouTube, and we've now had 1 billion downloads on YouTube. So it's out of control.
It's out of control.
But it started out with just this hillbilly kid in Nashville, Tennessee, that had a horrible accent. Now, I've still got my accent, but I got rid of the horrible part. And just telling people to get out of debt and handle money God's ways and loving them when they were hurting and giving them a hard time when they were being characters. And just for 30 years, we've been doing that. Now we've transitioned from it being what was called the Money Game into the Dave Ramsey Show. And then about 3 years ago, it's The Ramsey Show. And what that means is that all the Ramsey personalities, which are the other best-selling authors and thought leaders and speakers in our building, there's eight of us now that share the Ramsey Show as co-hosts. And we just take calls from people about mental health, about emotional and relational things, about career and job things, and certainly about money things, and do our best to answer them kind of from the seat of not your crazy uncle, but your wise old uncle that knows the Bible. And we're not really in your face because we're on a lot of mainstream things about our faith, but we never hide it. So everyone knows who we are, and they come to us anyway, even if they're not people who share those values.
So your show is caller-driven?
Yes, absolutely. We take calls all day long, 3 hours a day, and then we air an hour of it. And it is actually more than an hour's worth of it on TBN every day. And excited about that, by the way. That's a wonderful thing. We're already getting response. It's coming fast. I think it's going to be a really good partnership. The TBN audience has embraced us and welcomed us, and we're honored by that. But we just take calls, and it's people calling up, single mom calling up and can't pay her bills. It's a young couple that's fighting over money. Somebody's got student loan coming out their ears, and boy, there's a bunch of those. And someone that's having trouble setting boundaries with their mother-in-law or whatever. And so a little bit of everything in there. It's life and life wisdom. And the interesting thing is, while we tend to answer a lot of the same questions, it never gets boring because people are just interesting.
That's so true. Why do you think we have moved so far away from a generation who were very careful about every penny to generations that are deeply in debt?
Well, I think we've always had people that were deeply in debt, but common sense is just less common.
Yeah.
Is really what it amounts to. And I think we've had a perfect storm of several things hitting us. One thing that's happened is we now live in the most marketed to culture in the history of the world. And I'm a marketer. I'm not against marketing. Marketing's not evil. But the very purpose of marketing is to disturb you.
Mm.
And so you say, well, my life is not as complete as it would be if I bought this.
Mm. Yeah.
And so we have a very disturbed culture, because it creates this cognitive dissonance from a psychological viewpoint. And so we're creating what the Bible would call discontentment, as the opposite of godliness with contentment is great gain. But we've got the most discontent culture in the history of the world. That's bizarre.
Mm.
And then you add to that because of technology, and technology, again, I'm not against technology, but it's gotten out of control and it's being misused. And our attention spans are getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, to where people can't keep their eye on the ball. You know, they have the attention span of a gnat. It's just like, good, right, nothing. They've already changed the channel while we were watching us right now. And so, you know, our attention spans are just horrendous. And that is an indication of emotional and spiritual maturity.
Hmm.
The more mature you are emotionally and spiritually, the more you have the ability to delay pleasure for a greater good. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but it yields a harvest of righteousness. When you combine that with all of this marketing, then you've got increased consumption through the roof, and with that, ridiculous debts. And we're more prosperous, so we're sloppy.
Yeah.
You know, we're just kind of, you know, disorganized, and we can out-earn our stupidity to a point. And then you hit the wall, and you have a come to Jesus situation in your life, and then you get to learn common sense. And sadly, that's what happened to your mom, and because she was widowed. She didn't have choice.
No.
And that it was there. It's yeah, there. You got to do this now. And that's what happened to Sharon and I when we went broke.
See, that I want to ask about that, because I think when people hear the name Dave Ramsey, they assume because you're the leading expert that you've always done it right.
No.
Give us the other side.
No, I have a PhD in DUMB. No, when I was in my 20s, I was buying and selling real estate, and I got rich starting from nothing. But and that was back, you know, before cable TV was even going. And we didn't have Chip and Joanna to tell us out, right? And so so we were going crazy. And I got so deeply in debt. And I was a baby Christian. I didn't know anything about the Bible. And I just borrowed myself up to my eyeballs. And we lost everything. We went bankrupt at 28 years old. And so with a brand new baby and a toddler and our marriage hanging on by a thread, we had the opportunity to start again. And the way we say it around here is, I met God on the way up, but I got to know him on the way down.
Gosh, I love that. So I'm thinking of viewers watching in right now, and they're like, well, you know what? I'm on the way down.
Yeah.
Are there, I mean, I know you have this incredible Financial Peace University. For somebody who's watching right now and thinking, you don't understand, I'm losing it here, and I don't know how I'm going to survive. What are the kind of steps to even begin? Where do you even begin when you're in a mess?
You know, most of the time in my life and in the millions of people I've coached lives over the last several decades that I'm overwhelmed, it's if I just back up from it a little bit and give it a little perspective and then start saying, okay, let's list this in most important to least important. How do you eat an elephant? A bite at a time. Let's just quit worrying about the elephant. Let's figure out what the first bite is. And so what's the first thing?
Yeah.
And so when someone's in extreme crisis with their finances, we always teach them, okay, let's just sit down and talk about the four walls first. Let's get the four walls up on your house. Food. You have the money for food? Yeah. Okay, let's take that off the table. That calms me down a little bit. Okay. Lights and water. Okay, let's take that off the table. I can calm down a little bit because most people can cover those things.
Sure.
And then, you know, then let's get the rent, the mortgage covered. Okay, now we got food, shelter, clothing. You probably got enough clothing. Shut up, you know. And so, right, and so for a little while anyway. So food, shelter, clothing, transportation. We got to have something to drive to get to work so we can make the money to pay these bills. And so you take care of those things first, and you usually can scrape that together. Even if it's just a side hustle, you can scrape that together. Then you've got all the other mess.
Right.
And now, but now the rest of that's just a Monopoly game. Because I'm surviving. I'm warm. I'm fed. I got, you know, roof over my head. I'm not going to get rained on. The family's not going to, we're not all going to die. Because what happens is we have this drama in our head.
Oh, yeah.
When you can't see anything, you see nothing.
Right.
And so it's all there. It's too much. So just start breaking it down. Okay, now we got survival. The needs. Mm-hmm. Now I'd like to get this stupid student loan paid off. I'd like to get rid of this MasterCard because it's master of my life instead of Jesus. I'd like to get rid of this, you know, car payment. I may have to sell a car and get a cheaper car for transportation. That may have to amputate the Tahoe, you know, that kind of stuff. And so when you start breaking it down, it's very tactical, but it's strange. It's also releases your emotions.
Yeah.
Because you can relax. You go, okay, wait a minute. We have food. Chill. And they've got the basics. Now, the rest of this is just a game I'm losing at, not survival.
Yeah. But there's something about, I get that, there's something about writing down what is reality. Because when you don't write it down, it's six animals in your head rather than one animal on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. What do you say to, I'm thinking even our son is 26, he's in graduate school, and he has been able, through various things, to not accumulate a lot of debt. Mm-hmm. Some of it, his father and I. But what do you say to somebody who's kind of like worked hard and they're in their career now, but this gigantic student debt is just like hanging over them? How do you begin? I know you say a bite at a time, but...
You know, it's weird. When you make the main thing, it starts to go away. The problem is, you know, I've got to buy a house, or I've got to do this, or I've got to do that. No. First thing we need to do is evict Sally Mae.
Yeah.
We need to get her out of the house. You need an extra bedroom just for her. I mean, she's got to go. The first thing we got to do. And so when you lean into a singular thing with all of your extra income above necessities, you can knock it out. And so what we teach people to do is pay off your debt smallest to largest. And so if you've cleared up all of your debt except your $80,000 student loan, and you make $80,000 a year, well, that's a mountain to climb still.
Yeah.
Mathematically, that's going to take a little while, but it doesn't take 20 years. It doesn't take 10 years. Might take 2.5.
But that's doable.
Beans and rice and beans, live on nothing, attack that thing, because otherwise it's going to live with you for the rest of your dadgum life. They don't go away.
Yeah.
No one is coming to save you except you. There's no Calvary. No, it's not coming.
What is it like for you when you see your life's work radically transform somebody else's life? I mean, that must make it, I mean, it's like there's so many different types of ministry. There's so many different offerings we offer to the Lord. And I think that you have used your life, Dave, to make sure that God's children know how to live.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. I'm a big old softy. I cry at Applebee's commercials. So when I run into somebody, I sometimes get teared up. I mean, it's not unusual. My wife is like, what are you? And she's like, you've heard this 1,000 times. I know, but I hadn't heard her story, you know?
Yeah.
It's a new story. And so, but you know, what it is isn't it interesting that when we really grasp what God has done for us, how grateful we are that he chooses to also do that for someone else?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm a hillbilly kid from Antioch, Tennessee. I mean, the proof that God can do anything he wants to do through whoever he wants to do. So I'm not confused that I did it. I really didn't. I just showed people God's and grandma's ways of handling their life, handling their money. And then I think God has chosen to touch that in his graciousness. And then you get to see people's lives transformed. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
And lifting such a weight from people. Because there's nothing, I mean, when my husband knew that I would have the privilege of talking to you today, we were saying, gosh, don't you wish we'd met him 30 years ago? Because we made so many silly mistakes at the beginning of our marriage. And in fact, even like when I was in college, I had no idea that you could balance your checkbook. I thought you just wrote these things and then hopefully the bank would figure it out. I mean, so that says to me, it's never too late.
Oh, it's never too late. We meet with folks that are in their 60s or 70s who turn their lives around. And I've even met with a guy not long ago, he was 50 years old. The first time we met with him, he came in here and went through some of the stuff we were teaching, and I went through Financial Peace University, went through the class, and you know, in the next several years, by the time he was 60, he was a millionaire. He went from being broke to actually building substantial wealth to retire on. So it's not too late. Besides that, you're going to get old anyway. You might as well get smarter.
That's true. I noticed, I read something somewhere that you did quite an extensive study of millionaires. And I wondered, were there common threads of things that they all did that got to that place?
Oh, absolutely. And this came from an old book from the 90s called Millionaire Next Door, that a guy named Tom Stanley, that was a marketing professor at Georgia State at the time, wrote the book. And he did a study of a sampling of 750 millionaires, which if you've been through a statistics class, they teach you how to get the right number for the research to be statistically significant. And 750 doesn't sound like a lot to study, but it does meet the model of a statistical significance. But he got criticized because people didn't like the fact that he discovered that millionaires became millionaires by living on less than they make, by staying out of debt, by being on a budget, And people were like, no, you have to inherit your money, and whining and all this victim stuff that's out there in the culture. So we came back around many years later, and Tom and I actually became friends. He's passed away now. His daughter Sarah and I are friends now. But that was such a great piece of work. And we came in, and I kept hearing on the air, millionaires, 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 millionaires from our stuff, because we've been teaching it so long. So we decided to do a study, and I said, okay, to shut up the critics, let's don't do 750, let's study 7,500 millionaires. And we're going to hire an outside research firm to look over our shoulder to make sure our methodology is airtight, so there's no confirmation bias, we're not violating any of the research things, so that it's beyond question. Mm-hmm. And so we got carried away, we ended up studying over 10,000 of them. And the research methodology is so tight that if someone doesn't agree with the conclusion of this study, they're what's known as wrong. Okay? So, I mean, this is solid material. So here's one. Common thread. We hear all the time, the hope stealers out there in America say, well, America's dead. You can't get ahead. Communism has to take over. It's the only way we're going to get anything. And all this garbage. And so the only way you become wealthy is you have to inherit your wealth. Well, it's absolutely not true.
That's interesting.
We know that. 79% of America's millionaires inherited precisely zero. Another 5% inherited money, but it was such a small amount, it mathematically could not have made them millionaires. Granny left them $5,000. Okay? Another 5% got an inheritance, substantial inheritance, maybe $250,000, after they were already millionaires. Uh-huh. So we can go 5 and 5 and 79. That gives us 89. 9 out of 10 of America's current millionaires, and there's about 13.5 million of them, did not become millionaires because of an inheritance. If you disagree with that, you're what's known as wrong. This is statistics, and it's factual research.
Yeah.
That's one that we found. Another one that we found is it's kind of boring. They invest in their 401k. Oh. And their Roth IRA, and they pay off their house. They didn't hit the lottery. They, they're not sports figures or athletes, or they're not actors or rock stars, or they're not anybody you know.
Wow.
They're just regular folks. And the top five professions among the millionaires, number one was engineer, number two was accountant, number three, teacher.
Teachers. Now that's surprising to me.
Yeah, it blows people's minds. And people want to argue with us about that. We're like, we didn't make this up. It's in the research. I'm making money. I'm a teacher. Well, that's your problem. But number three, teacher. Number four, executive, business executive. Number five is attorney. Doctors didn't even make the top five. Medical doctors.
Wow.
Number six. And so what we figured out was okay, what do all these people have in common? What we figured out is they're all the tortoise. They're all plodders.
Slow and steady.
They're all slow and steady people. Mm-hmm. Engineers, accountants, teachers.
Yeah.
And they're all people that submit themselves to a proven process. If you're a lawyer, there's only one way to practice law. You can't violate that. The judge will throw you out. You know, if you're a teacher, you have lesson plans and processes that you're plugging into. Accountants, there's not three ways to do accounting. There's one. You know, engineers, if you build a bridge this way, it stands. If you don't, it falls. So, I mean, these are process people that submit themselves to proven principles and proven systems.
Yeah.
And so what happens is they look over at the money thing and they go, oh, okay, there's a system. We're going to live on less than we make. We're going to invest in the 401k. We're going to get out of debt and pay off the house. And boom, we got $1.5 million net worth. We're 52 years old. 500,000, 600,000 of it's a paid for house. Another $600,000 or $800,000 is my 401k and my Roth IRA. And it's boring. Almost all of them fit that pattern. There was just no fun. There was no fireworks. There was no get rich quick.
Mystery.
There was no, I learned something on TikTok and I got rich, and I watched something on cable television and I followed this. And they don't do it. They just don't do it.
I'm thinking of some of our viewers who are in their, say, in their 50s and looking toward retirement and feel like they have not done enough. Like they wish they'd been available, you know, they'd known about all your wisdom years ago. If you find yourself in your early 50s and retirement seems like an impossibility, where do you start?
The first thing I would tell you to do is work really crazy hard and sell everything in sight and get out of debt, because your most powerful wealth building tool is your income. when you don't have any payments. Yeah. When I don't have a $750 truck payment, I've got money to put into a 401k. Suddenly, it's magical. And so if we can get that cleared up in 18, 24 months, but I mean ridiculous intensity.
Yeah.
Where your broke friends think you need counseling. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And, yeah. You know, you need to lighten up. No, I'm not lightening up. I don't want to retire and eat dog food.
Real,
you know,
intensity.
No, I'm not. And so we're getting this cleared up. Now, you get that cleared up, and then you take that found money that used to go to banks, and we use that to max out 401ks and max out Roth IRAs in good growth stock mutual funds. Don't try to get rich quick. Don't get so – be fearful enough to be driven to be smart, but don't be so fearful that you get desperate. Because as soon as I get desperate, right after that, I get dumb. And right after I get dumb, I get broke. And it's happened to me a bunch. And so I'm not gonna play in the desperate land. But I do want to be highly motivated, not to the point that it's debilitating, but to the point that I can push forward and cause these things to happen. I'm amazed at how many people can put together $250,000, $500,000 in just a few years once they really start paying attention.
The one thing.
And that wouldn't be as much as say having $5 million, but it's more than broke people got.
That's for sure. Okay, what advice do you give to parents on how they bring up their children to be financially aware and financially responsible? And how young is too young?
It's never too young, but it's just age appropriate.
Yeah.
And my daughter, Rachel Cruz, who's one of our Ramsey personalities, and you guys have done some stuff.
Yeah.
She and I wrote her first number one best-selling book together called Smart Money, Smart Kids. And so teaching parents how to raise smart kids, smart money kids. And because she is one, I raised her. And how did we do this? So it's from the dad's perspective, the daughter's perspective, and all that. In that, we basically tell parents that there are four things you can do with money for adults. But there are four things we need to teach children to do with money, age appropriately, teach them to work. Now, we're not sending a three-year-old to the salt mines, okay? But they can pick up a toy.
Mm-hmm.
They can be aware. We're not sending a six-year-old to do some crazy labor thing, but they can help clear the dishes and make their bed. It's very possible. We don't have to go overboard with this, but teach them to work, and then when they work, pay them. And tell them that they're on commission, not on allowance.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a shift.
Commission means work, get paid. Don't work, don't get paid. Allowance you get just for breathing air.
Yeah, I like that. That's great.
And we don't want to teach breathing air. That's not the technique. That's not where money comes from. Money comes from work 100% of the time. So teach them to work, then teach them the three things to do with that. And we break it down into little kids' envelopes, little clear envelopes so they can see the money. And particularly if they're under 12, you want to do that. And teach them to save. And they don't have to save a lot. And it's not going to make them rich. What's going to make them rich later is you're building the savings muscle.
Right.
The rhythm of life involves saving.
Right.
You watched your mom, who lost her husband at 33 years old. You watched her be careful with money. Mm-hmm. More is caught than taught.
Yeah.
So they're going to be watching you, and you're going to help them build their little saving muscle. And teach them to give. And you want to build that generosity muscle because people who are generous always win at life. They're less selfish.
Yeah.
They're less motivated by greed.
Yeah.
They're always thinking about others. And these are always people we want around.
Mm-hmm.
So generosity changes everything.
Yeah.
And little kids are naturally generous, most of them.
Yeah, that's true.
And then teach them to spend wisely. Okay, and allow them to make some mistakes with all three.
I think that's important.
Make some mistakes. I mean, I remember one time Rachel had saved up some money from her doing her commission. She was a little tyke, and we went to Toys R Them. You remember when it was there?
I do. And Toys R Us.
and we went in, and she wanted Celebration Barbie, and she had about half enough money for Celebration Barbie. So we got sort of had a party Barbie. We didn't get the big one, and so because that's what she could afford. And she said, "Well, I said if you wait and save up some more, you can get the celebration." No, I want it now. And so she's got to do it now. But then later on, I wanted the celebration. Well, you made these choices. And so you teach them and love them.
Still under your roof.
And again, age appropriately. So when they're teenagers, teach them how to run a checkbook. So they know how it balances. They know how that stuff works. You mentioned that earlier, right?
That would have been good,
me too. Yeah. You know, and then when they go to college, it's not the first time they ever handle money in their lives. It's not the first time they make these decisions. My friend Andy Andrews always says, that we're not really trying to raise kids to become great kids. We're raising kids to become great adults.
Right.
And so these are adult lessons that I'm teaching you. It's why I make you do your homework. It's not because homework matters. It's because the discipline and study habits and growing your mind and your brain is necessary to win at life. And you have to brush your teeth because you're going to need them. And so, you know, these are things that you need as an adult that I'm, as a dad, I'm going to love you so much, I'm going to make you do them until you want to do them.
Okay, so I'm going to be one of your callers. You know, I'm going to call up and I'm going to say, okay, Dave, my husband and I are on totally different pages when it comes to money. You know, I want to save, I want to do this, you know, and he just spends and doesn't talk to me about it. And I'm panicking because we're not together. What do you say to a couple like that?
We get that call every day.
You do?
Yeah, that's wow. Most people, sadly. And it's so what that means is it's a great opportunity for growth. Mm-hmm. But the I think the first thing we need to say out loud is Larry Burkett used to say, spenders generally marry savers.
Interesting.
Opposites attract.
Wow.
You know, and because if you know, two people just like get married, one of you is unnecessary. So so let's just kind of go with the idea that this opposite thing's okay. So if you're a natural saver, my wife's the natural saver at our house. I am a saver as an act of will, as an act of my intellect, because it gives me more to spend and more to give. Because
yeah.
Spenders are generally more generous than savers, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Because we just throw money, you know. So we need to understand that that's how that other person ticks. And this is how I tick. And then we've got to start having a conversation about how we do this together.
Mm.
Because if you can share your money decisions, Jesus said your treasure's where your heart is. What you're really sharing is you're agreeing on your fears. You're agreeing on your dreams. You're agreeing on your sacrifices to win. We're going to say, okay, we're not going to buy that car right now, so that.
All right.
And it said now, not, we didn't say never.
Yeah, delayed gratification.
It's, you know, so that, because we don't want to put this kid through college. And so if we buy this car right now, he's going to end up with student loan debt.
Mm-hmm.
And because we were irresponsible. So we're going to make that choice consciously, and we're going to make it together. And the old Book of Common Prayer, you know, we all know, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and health. But the old Book of Common Prayer said, and unto thee all my worldly goods I pledge. So we're going to combine everything.
Wow.
Because we're combining our futures. We're combining our lives. And when we don't talk about money, we're not talking about a whole lot of other things too. When we can't talk about purchases, we're not talking, when we're hiding Target bags under the bed, that's not funny.
No.
That's really danger problem in your marriage. And so we've got to be able to discuss this and come to one mind. And I've discovered, as a business guy too, as a leader, that Proverbs 31 is exactly right. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, and he will have no lack of gain.
Yeah.
My wife does not have a business degree. She has not got a finance degree. And yet she's from East Tennessee, she gets a feeling. And if she gets a feeling, we don't go against that.
You have this gift of being able to simplify life and make it all doable.
Well, I think that, you know, financial people are the world's worst at trying to make something complicated. You know, drop our glasses down the end of our nose and tuck down. You know, it's like, you know, we have a well-diversified portfolio. What does that mean, even? Well, it means you just spread your stuff around. That's all it meant. Mm-hmm. But we have to use $22 words to act like we're smart. And here's an idea. Help people. Quit trying to act like you're smart. Help people get where they need to go. And biblical principles are not, in any area of our life, are not hard to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They're just hard to do.
Yeah.
Because I got to control this guy.
Yeah.
He's a problem.
So for people who maybe tuned in a little bit later, and we're here at Ramsey Solutions, Franklin, Tennessee. Beautiful, beautiful place, by the way.
Thank you.
Surrounded by the nice, lovely green hills. Tell us just one more time about the Financial Peace University, because I think that's a great place for a lot of people to start.
Now, FPU, we call it for short. You can check it out online at RamseySolutions.com, and you can find it at your local church. You can take it there as a class, and you can take it online virtually as a class. But it's not just a class. Most important part of it is not the teaching that we do. Yes, that knowledge helps, you know. For lack of knowledge, people suffer, right?
Yeah.
So we need the knowledge, but we also need humans in our life. It's not good that men be alone. And so we're going to be in a small group. And when the small group, it tells you that I'm not the only one that
that's
stupid
stuff.
That's
a huge thing about
it. It removes
small group.
The shame.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not the only one that's dumb. Because when I went broke, I thought I was the only dumb one. And then I found out other people in my church that I thought had it all together.
Exactly.
Because we go to church and lie, right? How's everything going? Just fine. Car's going to be repoed Tuesday, but everything's fine. You know, I mean, we just lie.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to put on the thing, right? And right. So, but you get in there and you go, wow, everyone has made mistakes with money. It's all of us. If you made mistakes with money, you're over 12. I mean, come on. So this is what Financial Peace University does. It removes the shame, but it also holds your feet to the fire to make the changes. Mm-hmm. Be not conformed to this world. Well, everyone in this world, who cares?
Yeah.
They're all broke. Yeah. 78% of America lives paycheck to paycheck. They got too much month left at the end of the money. So don't be normal. You don't want to be normal. So get the class walks you through and holds your feet to the fire and loves you and holds you accountable and encourages you. Because some of the people who come in there are broken and scared.
Absolutely.
And so we hold them and lift them up. And then some of them are like this. And we're like, no, don't do it that way. We love you. We love you enough to make you behave. So we're going to go do this God's ways. And, you know, you want to argue with this? Argue with God. He wrote it, okay?
Dave, we're so grateful to have you as part of the TBN family. And I'm just wondering, for people who are watching in and who feel deeply impacted by your words and your wisdom, would you just pray for our audience that they would find the grace and the strength to begin again?
Be honored. Father God, we know that your word says hope deferred makes the heart sick. So we pray for the hopeless right now. We pray for the folks that are struggling to see a light at the end of the tunnel. We lift up their marriages. We lift up their careers. We lift up their emotional state. We lift up their spiritual walk. And Father, we ask you just insert yourself lovingly and gently, as you always do, into their lives and then wrap your arms around them and protect them from the evil one. Cause them to grasp what you've got for them, but most of all, cause them to grasp the love you have for them. And then as they do that, give them the opportunity, like you have so many of us, to be transformed by your information, by your love, and Father, by your Son, Jesus. In his name, amen.